originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon as we welcome you to the show trainers listen to. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Mike Pena, coming to you once again from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, extending a special welcome to everyone across HRN Nation, including all of you listening live throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM channel 201 and tuned in to our free live streaming or archived podcast of this show, which is available on our HRN website every single week at horseracingradio.net. Very happy to have you with me for the next hour. And if we've learned anything from this show, Trainer Talk, over the past several years, it's that every trainer started somewhere and every trainer comes with their own unique story. And tonight's guest, trust me, he certainly has one of the more unique stories to tell. He has saddled 16 winners to date after earning his first win in 2008. That number would likely be much higher had he not spent 20 years as a professional wrestler at Ohio Valley Wrestling in Louisville, Kentucky. He is now working on his newest career of training racehorses, and in doing so, he follows in the footsteps of his grandfather, who worked as a trainer in Kentucky for many years. I've been hosting this show every Wednesday night now for right about 7 years. And I promise you, I have welcomed hundreds of trainers to the show. But in all of these years, I have never introduced a guest quite like this.
Got action in the ring, one fall, a 10-minute time limit, 234 pounds. Says he's from all over the country because his home is Mobile. Trailer Park Trash!
Trailer Park Trash!
Yeah, please join me in welcoming the man from everywhere, Trailer Park Trash, to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. He is Jerome Frank Miller, better known as Trailer Park Trash. And Trash, what's up?
Oh, man, that was Corey Macklin. God rest his soul. Hadn't heard that voice in a long time.
Well, you know, I went back through and scoured the internet looking for a clip that I could use there. And it, when I found that one, it was the first one that popped up. It just seemed absolutely perfect.
Yeah, he was a ring announcer for USWA, Corey Macklin. Very, very nice guy. Tragically died in a car accident.
Wow.
But a super nice guy.
Okay, so I'm going to start. We're not going to bury the lead. Where did the name Trailer Park Trash come from?
Jerry Lawler. When I got my first TV appearance, which was in Memphis, Tennessee, I'm thinking somewhere around 90, 91, Jerry Lawler. I went to his office and, you know, we was talking about the my gimmick and, you know, what he was going to use me as. And he just come up with that name. And, you know, it was funny at the time, you know, but he said, trust me, it'll stick. People will not forget it. And he was correct.
Yeah, they didn't. And I love that. The man from everywhere. And I guess that's really the essence behind the name, right?
Yeah. Dean Hill, actually, a local ring announcer here in Louisville, come up with that part of it. Jerry Lawler always called me the man that had two houses that were mobile and four cars that wasn't. And Dean, later on, Dean Hill come up with comes from everywhere because his house is mobile.
When did you start wrestling?
I started class in 1990. Went to class for 6 months, 7 days a week, day and night. And then I had my first match in 6 months. And actually, it was 6 months to that date that I had my first TV appearance with Jerry Lawler.
Wow. You and I are pretty much the same age. You're 47. I'm 48. I grew up with the likes of the Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan and, you know, that era of professional wrestling. Your thing that you were involved with, Ohio Valley Wrestling, for all those years, it was similar, but it was different in some ways, right?
Well, I mean, I grew up watching USWA. I grew up watching Jerry Lawler here at Louisville's every Saturday morning at noon on Channel 3. You know, Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, Randy Savage, Rip Rogers, Danny Davis. That, you know, that's what I grew up watching. And Ohio Valley Wrestling actually started as Nightmare Incorporated, the Danny Davis School of Professional Wrestling.
Okay.
And myself and you know, a handful of other students, we just stuck with him, and Danny built the company from there and later become Ohio Valley Wrestling, and the rest has been history. You know, a lot of good wrestling talents come out of that school.
Yeah, you look at the names that have come through there, and it's kind of a who's who of professional wrestlers, right? I mean, you've got, what, Dave Bautista, John Cena, Brock Lesnar is another one, Randy Orton. I read some of those names as I was getting ready for the program, and I said, wow, Ohio Valley Wrestling is for real.
Yes. It was Danny Davis and Rip Rogers and Jim Cornette all got together, and when Danny got the developmental contract for WWE, and that's basically what it was, is they sent their guys here for us to train. And, you know, like I said, look at the names. It's kind of, you know, the name speaks for itself. Anybody who's anybody in professional wrestling, household names, 90% of them come from OVW.
When you first started in 1990, did you ever see yourself having that long of a career and reaching the heights that you did?
No, honestly, you know, my goal was to make Memphis wrestling. You know, that's what I grew up watching. Never had any aspirations of going to WWE or you know, even traveling the world as far as that goes. You know, I wanted to live the life that I watched growing up. And fortunately, you know, I got to do that, and then, you know, everything else was just a bonus. So, no, you know, I wanted to make a career out of it. I was extremely happy with what I did in the business, but at the same time, I did not expect it to go as far as it did.
How about on the horse racing side? Even at that age, were you following the horses and into the racing side of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my grandfather, you know, he always kept a few horses in training, and I was always, you know, ever since I could remember from earliest childhoods, was Saturday morning wrestling and going to the racetrack with my grandfather every day. You know, every Friday we went to the races, and then Saturday morning I'd get to go to the barns with him Saturday and Sundays, and we'd be back at the races those days. And when school was out, that's where I was at with my grandfather.
Where would he train for the most part?
He had a couple at Churchill Downs. Before then, he was mainly, there was a track here in Louisville called Miles Park.
Okay.
Which was a little before our time. I believe it shut down, you know, probably a year or two before we were thought of. But that's mainly what he, you know, he worked. He worked at Reynolds Aluminum, and he just loved the horses as well. And the horses kind of, you know, I was his only grandchild, and me and him bonded over the horses. So yeah. They were always, I knew, you know, I was always a horse fan and always loved the horses. When I was younger, I knew I didn't have the patience. You know, I wasn't very smart, but I was smart enough to realize that. And if you don't have the patience, you know, you're wasting your time. So I hoped at some point when I got older, I was mature enough to have the patience. And fortunately enough, I did. So I consider myself lucky. I had two childhood dreams growing up, and I've accomplished both.
Yeah, very much so. He is trainer Jerome Frank Miller. He does go by Frank, so we'll call him that for the rest of the program. Frank Miller here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. As you heard, or if you didn't hear, if you're just joining us on the program, he wrestled professionally in the Ohio Valley Wrestling, which has produced so many top wrestlers in the sport, and he, of course, was one of them. A six-time tag team champion and the first ever hardcore champion and heavyweight champion at OVW. Okay, so for people that aren't familiar with that sport, Frank, put those accomplishments into perspective. What do they mean?
Well, you know, to do it at a company that I've loved dearly from day one, Danny Davis not only was my trainer, but, you know, later become my mentor and as much a father figure to me as my real dad was. You know, me and Danny were just super tight. So anything I was able to accomplish in that company was just overwhelming for me. You know, I was the first ever hardcore champion. I was the first ever heavyweight champion. And along with a good friend and partner of mine, Flash, we were 16-time tag champions. And that was just here. You know, I've held other belts in other areas of the world, but nothing means to me as much as anything I did in OVW.
What is a hardcore champion?
Hardcore champion. Hardcore matches are, you know, it's not what you was used to watching growing up. It might have been something you seen once a year. It's basically what we call toys. We get to use our toys. We get to use chairs, tables, ladders, kendo sticks, belts, anything that you wanted to bring to the ring with you, you could use. You know, during the match, there was pretty much no DQ. So, you know, it was pretty much the toughest guy would win it. Whoever could stand at the end by the time you're done beating the hell out of each other pretty much was the winner.
So. You know, it's funny because when I was growing up, I would always hear people say, well, you know, that professional wrestling, that's all fake. It's all staged. And then when you do learn more about the sport, you realize that professional wrestlers are tremendous athletes, and there is an unbelievable amount of time that goes into training to be a professional wrestler and to reach those heights. So tell me what goes into it, Frank, and the sacrifices you had to make.
Well, when I got into the business, it was a lot different than it is now. I was fortunate enough to get in with what I call the still old school wrestlers. You know, like I said, Danny Davis, Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, list goes on and on. But back then, you wasn't taught as much right off the bat. You had to earn it. You had to earn the respect. And you had to pay your dues before you was given any kind of idea about the business. You know, literally, as far as me goes, they beat the hell out of me every night for, you know, 7 days a week, and didn't really teach me anything. They was just wanting to see if you had the heart and could withstand the pain, because, you know, we're people, you know, yeah, it's scripted. You know, it's a different day and time. People admit it. They say it. It's scripted. But, you know, the physical part of it is, I mean, it's brutal. You know, and you get up every day, you hurt. But, you know, it's kind of like a jockey. I mean, I think they're the toughest, pound-for-pound toughest athlete in the world. But, you know, they get up every day with something hurting, and you just keep pushing. You just keep going. And then once you earn their respect and they think you've paid your dues, they'll actually start teaching you the business. So it was a long time before I ever learned anything. I mean, I would just sit in class, and when it was my time to get in the ring, I'd get in the ring, and they'd beat the hell out of me for 5 minutes, and I'd sit out there and recoup for 20 and do it all over again.
Well,
and
I think,
you know, but once you earn their respect, because, you know, honestly, out of every 20 students, you might have one that stays, and half of them will quit after the first night.
Yeah.
Because most people have that, you know, aspect of it's already in their thinking, oh, this is fake, I could do that, you know, and it's a lot different when you're in there.
I think the jockey analogy is a great one, because, you know, jockeys are continually coming back from different injuries, different broken bones, surgeries, concussions, and they battle back like any athlete would. You had your fair share of broken bones too, so you can relate.
Yeah, and I've had you know, several, many concussions as well. You know, you battle through it. It's like anything else. I'm a firm believer you're only a loser if you don't try. You know, anything in life. Anything you want to go after, get up and go after it. You know, as long as you try, you're not a loser. You didn't lose. And so that's kind of what kept you going. You didn't want to be a quitter. You didn't want to be known as a quitter. And, you know, when I first had talked about signing up for wrestling school, of course, you know, most people I knew laughed. Yeah, right. You know, you won't make it. And that just makes me, just gives me more drive to do it. So it was very tough. And I was a survivor, thank God, because it's, the business actually taught me a lot. Not just the physical part, especially taking care of yourself, but it, you know, I learned a lot of life lessons in the wrestling business. And, I credit Danny Davis for making me the man who I am today.
How many bones did you break when you were wrestling?
Over 36, you know, don't have an exact count anymore, but, you know, it was over 36, which compared to jockeys is nothing, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, over 36, and I've had 16 concussions.
Does it bother you that some people still don't believe in wrestling, and you hear people say, you know, it's all staged, it's all fake? Does that bother you?
I learned to live with that, you know, because you hear it all the time over the years, and you know, I used to get upset about it and, you know, and bulk up and, hey, you know, get in the ring with me. You know, I'll show you how fake it is. And, you know, you learn to be a little more humble as you get older, and you just let that stuff slide off your chest because, you know, I know what it's about, and everybody else in the business knows what it's about. So, you know, and you're entertaining the people, and that's the biggest thing that keeps you going. You know, you love the business, but you love going out there and entertaining the people. And there's a lot of psychology involved. You know, you really, with your actions, you have to know when to pick the crowd up and when to let them down, and, you know, when to get reactions out of them, and all that stuff's taught. You know, it's taught. It don't mean you'll get it, but it's taught to you. And you hope that, you know, you could get it and understand it. Because once you do, it puts you kind of on a whole nother level.
Yeah, it's a great point, too, about picking the crowd up and the excitement level. And I can tell you, in watching those videos of some of your matches, the excitement level is off the charts. And I wonder, does racing do a good enough job of picking up the crowd at these big race days like that? I mean, do we do that day in and day out? Should we have a situation where a guy like Frank Miller walks into the paddock and is introduced as Trailer Park Trash, and there's music playing and all those kinds of things?
You know, I don't know really how they would be able to do. You know, they can always. You know, I'm all about racing, so I'm kind of one of those old school, hardcore kind of guys. Yep. When it comes to racing. I'm all about taking care of my horses and racing the horses. I don't think it's as fun as it used to be going to the races when I was a kid. Of course, you know, we're talking years later now that I'm a lot older. But when I was a kid, I loved going to the races with my grandparents. You know, of course, to me, it was just the excitement of the racing itself. And, of course, I believe that should still be what draws you, is just the excitement of the racing. But, you know, that is a good question. I don't really know what could be done as far as, you know, I think you can get away from people being too much involved in racing if you add too much of other things.
Yeah, yeah, and I say that.
Churchill has their... You know, Churchill has their night at the races, and they, you know, they have the bands and stuff. And I think that's all great, but I think you could overdo it.
Yeah, and I say that tongue
kind
in cheek.
Similar to wrestling.
You couldn't really. I mean, obviously, the safety of the horses is paramount and first and foremost, and it should be. So you can't do a lot of those types of things. But I know Saratoga played around with that this year, where they did some jockey introductions before some of the big stakes races, and they had the jockeys come out and walk through smoke, and they had, you know, light show and everything as they came out of the jocks room, which was away from where the horses were in the paddock. And I said, you know, that's
right.
I liked it. I thought it was cool. It was something different. You know, and maybe it's something that appeals to as we always talk about, a younger demographic in the sport.
Yeah, no, things like that I think is great. Anything to, you know, and that gets everybody's blood pumping. You know, even the jockeys, you know, it's like if I'm ever in a bad mood, I just go, you know, when I go to the barn in the morning, it's, you know, my horses are therapeutic to me. So anything they could do like that I think is great to bring more attention to the sport and good attention. You know, and you got to change things some to draw a younger crowd out, but you can't overdo it. Like I said, for example, Andre the Giant. You know, 7'4", 550 pounds. We didn't see him in your town but once a year because, you know, once you've seen him, there's nothing else to see. It's like going to the circus every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have to be careful with what you do and how you do it, but don't overdo it.
How big were you during your wrestling days, Frank?
I'm 6'1". I think the heaviest I ever got was 280. And, in the time that I actually was eating healthy and working out and everything like that, I got down to 207. But, of course, that didn't fit the gimmick too well, being in shape and looking good. that was one thing I always laughed at the other guys. You know, y'all got to live in the gym. I'm going to get me some beat. I had to look to keep the part looking.
Yeah,
if it looked too good. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, if you go by the name Trailer Park Trash, you got to kind of fit the image, I guess, right?
Yeah. And you know, that name was, you know, I was billed to be a bad guy in the beginning with that name. And Danny got the idea of turning me into the good guy. And, you know, we all laughed at him. He just told me he said, just listen to me and do what I tell you. And I did. And, you know, the rest was history. We couldn't turn me back to a bad guy if we wanted to.
Tell me.
Because I related, you know, and not making fun of anyone. But I was the guy in the crowd that actually made it to the ring. You know, the fans that sit in the ring was, you know, they looked at me like I was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I was just billed as the regular guy that made it. And that's what the people loved.
Tell me about a couple of the matches or a couple of the moments that stand out to you in your wrestling career.
Probably the two biggest. When I lived in Puerto Rico, I got a taste of what wrestling was like in the 50s and 60s here, where everybody believed it. And, you know, I got stabbed in the arm one time down there by a fan. You couldn't walk down the street without someone wanting to fight you. You know, and I was a bad guy down there. So I got the taste of what actually, what we call getting heat, which is the fans, you know, not liking you at all. I got a real good taste of what that actually was back in the day when I was in Puerto Rico. And probably the, you know, as far as my other match would go, would be here in the Louisville Gardens with Flash Flanagan. We did, it was our first street fight we did at the Louisville Gardens. And we as a shoot, we both had vowed to, you know, they're going to have to carry us to the hospital when we're done. We was all about giving the fans their money's worth. And we did that night. And that night I actually broke my hip.
Oh, wow.
Come off the top rope through a table through the concrete floor and just shot straight through like a cannon. Broke my hip and got knocked out for a minute. I got one of my concussions at that time too. The table flipped up and smacked me in the back of the head. But you know, when you was younger, we thrived off that pain, man. We loved it. You know, it was like the more you could hurt me, the better we liked it. You know, it was just a different day. And a lot younger, of course. You know, as you get older, you start. Man, I wish I listened to Rip or these guys doing this stuff. Yeah, every morning when I get up, well, I sure wish I listened to them.
And you mentioned all the concussions. You mentioned all the concussions, Frank. I mean, that's obviously a big thing with the NFL now and a lot of sports, trying to cut down on the concussions and the long-term trauma that can be involved with it. How about you with all those concussions? Have you had any of those types of issues?
I've got some nerve damage. You know, I actually went through a pretty bad health over the nerve damage, but, you know, the doctors have got all that right medications and everything squared away. But, man, you know, what affected me was my eating. I would go several days without eating or even being hungry. My body would tell me that, you know, I would have night sweats. It was unbelievable for my body telling me there's something wrong when there actually wasn't. It was just that part of your brain that you know, it's telling your body, hey, there's something wrong. It was a factor. You know, I've had some nerve damage over it, but, you know, for the most part, nothing major that I consider major, not what some of these NFL players go through.
Yep. Well, thank God for that.
You got to look to, you know, these guys sometimes take, you know, they might take 20, 30 shots in the head every game, you know, once a week. We did it on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah, he's trainer Frank Miller. He's my special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Frank, when you were traveling the world, you touched on that earlier, you spent a lot of time with World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Famer Jerry the King Lawler, and you traveled all over the world with him, and you talked about your experience in Puerto Rico. I read where you would actually find time to go to racetracks wherever you were traveling to, so tell me about that.
If there was one close, yeah. If I could find it, because you know I'm not very fluent on other languages but English. So, like in Puerto Rico, they had a racetrack down there I would go to, and you know I would get the program. Of course, I couldn't read it. I could read the running lines. That was it. But the wording, you know, you could read, and it was entertaining to me just to see, you know, the differences of racetracks in different countries. You know, over in Japan. Excuse me, where they run clockwise. You know, it's just different. So I just love to go any racetrack I could while I was traveling. If we had time, a lot of times you was in one town and out the same day or out the next morning and gone to another one.
Yep.
You know, depending on how much time you had. Some places, you know, obviously in Japan, I was over there a few times for like 3 months at a time, but in Puerto Rico, I just lived there once, Mexico. You know, anytime I could get the time to go, I would go. And to me, it was entertaining, like I said, just to see the differences in the way they run or, you know, the tack some of them used. Not just any of it was entertaining to me.
Did you have a favorite?
I'd say in Japan, you know, it's a beautiful track. It's just awkward to me watching them clockwise. I just think it's awkward, and it looks like the horses are awkward the way they're running down the lane. But that would probably have been the nicest one I've been to, and the one I like the most.
When did you finally start to think about getting out of wrestling and going back into kind of immersing yourself back into the horses?
Well, once I quit traveling so much in wrestling, I got custody of my daughter, and she was 18 months old. So obviously the traveling was out. I went to more part-time basis on the weekends. And I was at the track every day on the front side. You know, at friends, we'd always go through the track every day. Churchill was open, and I just, I missed it. I missed being around the horses. You know, this may sound strange, but whenever I'm around the horses in the track, I feel a sense like my grandfather is with me. You know, it's just a good feeling that comes over me. So I just finally decided, you know, in them days you had to taking your test to get your trainer's license. Everything was a little different than it is now. So through a good friend of mine, Bill Coley, got me together with Mark Hartledge, who's a trainer I worked under for a year and a half. To try to remember what I'd learned as a kid and you know, keep learning from him. And then I got my license. And I think that was in 2008. I went my first three starts, which spoiled me. Because then all of a sudden you think, man, I know what I'm doing. You know?
Yeah.
And but the horses will settle you down real quick. And I just did it part time. I just kept one horse. And that horse got claimed, and I'd get another one. And then, you know, for a couple of years, I picked up a small stable. And things did pretty good there for a while, and then just, you know, owner got out of it. And I really wanted to wait till my daughter was older before I got into it full time. She was always my first priority. So she's now, you know, she's happily married, and I have a grandson, so it's time for me to try to get back into something I love doing full time. You know, I'm there every morning, but, you know, obviously I have to leave and I go work a regular job. But I really prefer just to be at the track.
Yeah, well, it's worked out pretty well so far. And again, getting back into it, I guess, if you want to look at it in that fashion. And Frank, I hope I'm saying that the right way. Is that the right way to look at it, that you're kind of now just starting to get back into really training on a full-time basis?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm wanting to do. You know, I've just got three horses right now and a couple of different owners that are great people. It's hopefully maybe look to get some more horses. But I want to better myself as far as the quality of horses that I'll have. You know, used to I would take anything and just to have a horse in training. And, you know, over time I learned, you know, people really do pay attention to your records. better quit just taking anything and running the run. You know, I always tried to have the horse in the best shape possible to race. But, you know, a lot of times I had horses that just didn't belong in that spot, you know, at that particular track. So I'm trying to upgrade on the horses that I have and have a better stock and better quality, you know, run better races and try to make the owners money. I'm not really all, you know, you got to make money, especially in this business, to stay alive. But, you know, I've had money, been there, done that. I just want to do what's best for my horse and my owners and try to make them some money and have fun.
Boy, that sums it up right there. He is trainer Frank Miller here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what he learned from his grandfather that he's now applying to his training moving forward here today. We're back with more. Stay with us as Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nominations are now open to the Fasig Tipton November Sale, the world's premier breeding stock event. The sale annually produces the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world, and in 2018 sold 22 horses for $1 million or higher. Held the Monday after the Breeders' Cup, this one-night sale offers leading racing and broodmare prospects, proven producers, and selected yearlings in the most electric atmosphere you will find at any thoroughbred auction. Nominate your best today, the Fasig Tipton November Sale, where stars shine brightest.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves No Doubt today. she won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Talking with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, what do Flair strips do?
Mike, I still hear people ask, is there something wrong with that horse? It's got that thing on its nose. It's kind of like asking, is there something wrong with that jockey? He's got that helmet on his head. Both helmets and the strips are for protection. The strips are proven to protect horses by reducing lung bleeding, conserving energy, and reducing fatigue. The strips are simply a tool to help keep horses healthy so they perform their best.
Learn more at flarestrips.com/learn.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back, Mike Penna and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Broadcast Studios. Happy to have you back for the second half of the program as I continue my visit with Trailer Park Trash. Yeah, that was his wrestling name for about two decades. He is Frank Miller, the 47-year-old who is now training horses full-time at Churchill Downs here in Louisville. And it's been quite a ride. If you missed any portion of the first half of the show and Frank's stories about his wrestling career and how he got to this point today, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program. All of our shows, they're available for you every single week at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Don't forget, too, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and Frank Miller, like all of our guests who appear on this program every week, going to receive a gift courtesy from one of our sponsors, that is Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So we will get those out to him and hope that they help him continue to win more races as he looks to build his stable now as he is, as I mentioned, training full-time. Frank, let me ask you this question. We'll again talk about your relationship with your grandfather and everything you learned that you're applying today. But if you were to, and I'm going to put you on the spot for a minute, if you were to give a wrestling name to a trainer, maybe a Bob Baffert, what name would you pick for Bob?
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
I told you I was putting you on the spot.
Oh, Bob Baffert. I would have to call Bob the Unnatural Blonde.
All right, there you go.
It's nothing personal, Bob, but I would have to call him the Unnatural Blonde, I guess.
All right. How about a guy like Todd Pletcher?
Oh, man. The Walking Stick.
The Walking Stick.
The Walking Stick. He just never looks happy.
He does after he wins the Kentucky Derby.
Come on, Todd. You got to have some fun, man. We got to have some fun.
Let me tell you. Yeah, he wins those big races. He's always smiling. And he wins a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. That's about the only time you see him smile. I've actually been fortunate to meet them both several times. They've both been nothing but nice to me. So.
Yeah, no, they're great people. And obviously, we're having a little fun here on Trainer Talk tonight. Frank, tell me about some of the other trainers. You mentioned Mark Hartledge and learning from him. We talked about your grandfather, and we'll do more of that here in the second half of the show. But who are some of the other trainers that, as you were a kid and following your wrestling career growing up, that you would keep an eye on them and really admire the way they went about their day-in, day-out business?
Oh, Jinx Fires. I always, when I was a kid, Jinx Fires. I was a fan of his. Man, there were several of them. I was more, as a kid, I was more into the horses than I was the trainers. Like Run Dusty Run was my favorite horse of all time growing up.
Yep.
And of course, when I was my grandfather, he was my idol in my eyes. So, there was nobody, and even though he just had a few horses, there was nobody better than him in my eyes.
What made him so good?
I just think it was his demeanor. My grandfather was, anybody that ever met him loved him. He was just a super nice guy. He didn't get excited and upset. He took things with a grain of salt and let things roll off his shoulder and go on. And he loved the horses, and I'm grateful to have got that from him. The horses came first, always did, and they do with me and always will. The care for the horses always come first. And he was the same way. And that was one of the things. And I'm lucky. I've got a good group of people now that I'm fortunate to be a trackside. You know, I've been there 10 years now, made a lot of friends, and I'm still not scared to ask questions. You know, I don't claim to know it all by any means, and I believe you should learn something every day, good or bad. You know, if you keep your eyes and ears open, you're going to learn something. And that's really my mentality every day is, you know, make sure I learn something new. Because, you know, Ric Flair told me years ago, once you, whatever you're doing in life, when you think you know it all, it's time to quit. Because most likely you don't know nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you can always learn.
You know, we got some great trainers over the world. I mean, everybody's, you know, the track side's like a close-knit family. Everybody seems to jump up and help each other out if need to be. You know, Dennis Rowe, I'm in the barn with some real good trainers and good friends of mine, Dennis Roberson, Matt Corden Brock, Jimmy Durbin, Kevin Aubrey. You know, it's just I'm in a fortunate spot because I'm surrounded by good people, and I believe that makes who you are as well by who you surround yourself by. So,
yeah, you know, you mentioned the name Ric Flair. I was just telling the story to my producer before we came on air. Earlier this year, I went to Turks and Caicos for a wedding, and Ric Flair was on our flight, and he couldn't have been a nicer person. He was sitting in first class. He talked to every single person that was up there. And then as we got off the plane, we had to wait to walk into the terminal, and he was taking pictures with all the kids that recognized him on the plane. And you know, he was with his family, and he still took time to do all of that. And it was great to see.
Yeah, no, Rick, you know, I felt the same way in the wrestling business. I was surrounded by great guys that, you know, entertaining the fans was first and foremost priority because, you know, they're paying their hard-earned money to come and see. So just because you're not feeling good today don't mean, you know, you still go out there and perform. And like that's what I've done with the horse, you know, horse business. I've surrounded myself by good people, good trainers. You know, we're always willing to help each other out from anything. You know, if a horse gets loose on the track, you know, we're all standing out there to try to help catch it. And you know, from anything, you know, your bandages, you know, you run out of bandages. Left in my case. Take everything home to wash it and forget it next morning. So, you know, I'm on saddle towels or down the layer, I'll bring them on. You know, but that's just my philosophy on everything. Surround yourself with good people.
How about the rest of your family? Are they interested or involved in horse racing in any way?
Honestly, on my grandfather's side, yes. My cousin David is... you know, a huge horse racing fan, has owned horses in the past. You know, on my mom's side of the family, not so much. They enjoy watching the Derby and things of that nature, but, you know, they're not into it, nothing like I am. You know, but like I said, from ever, my first day of memory, I was around horses and watching wrestling.
Yeah, and you've been able to make a living, as you said earlier in the show, with your two loves. And a lot of people, Frank, don't get that opportunity. You've had it.
No, they don't. And that's unfortunate because, like I said, I'm a firm believer. No matter what your dream is, you know, go after it. Like I said, you're never a failure unless you don't try. And, you know, hard work and determination, pretty much I believe you can do anything you want. And, you know, like I said, people laughed at me when I said I was going to be a professional wrestler. A year later, I was on TV. You know, several people laughed at me when I said I was going to, you know, follow my grandfather and I'm going to start training horses. And a year later, I was in the winner's circle. So, you know, to me, it's just hard work and determination will get you anything.
What's your daughter think of Dad being a horse trainer?
You know, my daughter loves the horses. She's not as big into the racing part as I am. She loves the animals. You know, my daughter, I kind of raised her, you know, with the same scenario as myself. You know, don't ever quit. You know, if it's something you want to do, go after it and do it. And she kind of follows in the same way. And, you know, but as far as the horse racing itself, like I said, she loves the horses. She loves all animals. But she's, you know, it takes a special person to want to get up at 3:30 every morning, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
That's just not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, it's a 365-day-a-year profession, and as you said, you have to get up every morning, you have to be there, and even when you're away from it, you're really not away from it. It's still your business.
No, you're not. But, you know, it all falls back to, I believe you should, you know, any job you have, you know, pick a career. This is something I've always told my daughter, pick a career of something that you love to do, because then it's not work. You know, to me, training horses is not work to me. That's something I love doing. It's not a, I mean, sure, there's some mornings you get up and you're driving anyway. I'd love to stay in bed a few more hours, but if I tried, I couldn't have, you know, you just, you know, do what you love doing. Because there's nothing worse in life than getting up every morning and going to do something you hate.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever career you take, make sure it's something you love to do, and it's, then, you know, it don't really become work.
What if
you enjoy what you do, obviously, or you wouldn't spend the countless hours every day of searching stories, you know.
Watching wrestling videos.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of them out there, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How old's your grandson, Frank?
Nicholas will be 2 years old in January.
All right, so if one day Nicholas comes to you and says, Granddad, I want to be a horse trainer, what advice are you going to give him?
Well, I mean, you know, as long as it's something he really loves to do, I'm all for it, you know. Like I said, I just believe that if it's something you love to do, you should do it, you know, because it just makes life so much easier. But, you know, if that's what he wants to do, I'm all for it. You know, at least I think by then when he makes that decision, he'll see what I do and, you know, the hours it's put into it. And, you know, at least he'll know it's something he's just not going to walk into and everything be handed to him and, you know, you're going to make money. And, you know, it's tough enough to just pay your bills in the horse racing business, much less make money.
So, yeah.
And I tell everybody that up front, you know, my goal is to get them to pay for yourself. Then we'll worry about making money.
Yeah, yeah, we're talking with Frank Miller here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. He wrestled professionally for 20 years before turning his attention to the horses. And even when he was wrestling, he still dabbled in the horses as much as he could. And he followed the races when he was traveling all over the world as a wrestler. And now here he is with his own operation. Three horses at this point, would like it to be more. And Frank, as you know, that will happen over time. You'll continue to build that operation. But I found it interesting as I read the article that Churchill had put out earlier this week that this is a first job for you, but then after you finish training, you'll go to a second job too. So you kind of you wear a couple of hats.
Yeah, I'm not one for sitting around. You know, I tried retirement one time, and that don't work for me. I'm not the type of person that can, there's only so much fishing you can do. And I've traveled my whole life, so, you know, the idea of retiring and traveling across the United States is not really a very pleasing to me. So, you know, it's like I said, I'll never retire as long as I got the horses. Because to me, it is retirement, but I have to stay busy. And, you know, I work a regular job when I leave the track every morning because I can't sit around all day, and three horses really isn't enough to keep me there all day, so... You know, I would love nothing more than to, you know, get to the barn in the morning and not leave till we feed dinner and go home. You know, but there's just only so much you can do with a few horses. So hopefully at some point I'll get to pick up more horses and build the stable up to where it's, you know, my goal is to just train horses. That's what I want to get back doing full time.
One of the quotes
but
in that...
You know, I have to stay busy. I'm just not a sit-around kind of person.
Yeah, yeah. One of the quotes, Frank, that I loved in that Churchill Downs press release, that article they did on you, was when you said, I think training wrestlers is similar to training horses. How so?
Well, that just comes to the aspect, you know, to obviously keep them fit and healthy and happy. And, you know, and if you put them in the right spot, then, you know, they're going to perform for you. And it's the same way as wrestlers go. If, you know, as long as they're happy and healthy and you have them in the ring with the right people, you know, they're going to perform for you and the crowd's going to get what they want. So, and to me, in that aspect of it, you know, I'm a firm believer as far as horses, keep them happy, healthy, fit, and put them in the right spot. You know, if you do them four things, that's all you can really do. You know, it's up to the racing gods after that. But, you know, wrestlers are kind of similar to that. You know, when I was a trainer for OVW, you know, obviously we was teaching, but at the same time, you wanted to keep you guys, you know, fit. And anybody will respond better when they're happy and, you know, healthy. So that's kind of the mindset I go to with that.
Let's flash back 11 years ago to 2008 and that first winter. You mentioned you won with your first three starters. Take me back to that first one in 2008. What was that day like? What do you remember about that win?
Man, honestly, I cried like a baby. All I could think about was my grandfather, how proud he would be, especially taking a horse that was given to me, for free. A good friend of mine, trainer Jimmy Durbin, him and his brother Jerry, I've known Jimmy. I think he was the first person to ever cut my hair. He's also a barber. But when I was under Hartledge and I just got the license, and you need your own horse, and they have one at the farm. So we got one out here you can take and see what you could do with. And I got lucky and just figured her out, figured out what made her happy. And she responded. She was a cheap horse, but I won my first three races with her. And I think I went five with her altogether within a year and hit the board. I think out of 10 starts, I had five wins, 3 seconds, and 2/3. And then she got claimed to Churchill from me. But the first win was, I love my grandfather so much, and still do, and still miss him every day like he just passed away yesterday. So, like I said, that's a big reason besides the horses that I'm there. It's just I feel like he's with me. And that day I got my first win, and he's all I can think about, how proud he would be that, it's kind of like I had the feeling of I made it,
What do you think he would say if he could see you back into horses and training the way you are today? What do you think he'd say to you?
He'd probably just tell me to keep doing what I was doing. He used to, a lot of things I come up with are things that he told me, don't work a job you don't like. Try to find something you love doing because that's going to make you're going to have a happier life out of it. He would probably, I think he would be proud. He would be proud to follow his footsteps. But I think he'd be more proud of anything, to be honest, when I raised my daughter and she's turned out to be such a great kid and a great mother and wife. I think he would be more proud of me in that way than anything. But he would definitely love the fact that I followed his footsteps and the horses.
Yeah,
he lived and breathed them. I mean, every day. But so if he wasn't over in the mornings training them, he was.
Yeah, but you know what, Frank? You have to, right? If you're going to be a horse trainer, and I've had several trainers tell me that over the years on this program, that it has to be all-consuming if you're going to be successful. Is that right?
That's 100% correct. You have to. And honestly, I'm just a little below that yet. Obviously, like I said, because I work, but I'd like to get more horses because I think you have 24/7. It's no different than the wrestling business. When you was on the road, all you was doing was talking about different moves, or you was talking about your matches, or you gotta eat it and breathe it. You got to know what's going on. It's one of them days you let a week slide by and you can miss so much. And like I said, I'm a firm believer, the more you're on it, the more you keep your eyes open, the more you're going to learn. Because I don't think you can ever stop learning.
Did you have
every horse is different.
Did you have a favorite horse of your grandfather's when you were a kid and he'd take you out there all the time? Was there one horse that for whatever reason stood out to you?
I really can't remember the names too much of what he had because he when he had horses, he never kept but a couple, but it only seemed like hell he didn't have them a week or two and they moved on. So it was really hard to remember any names he had, but he had one stud horse I remember as a little kid that was, just mean as a snake. This horse would let him put me on his bareback, and he would walk me around the shed row with it. And the horse would, do nothing, just walk as calmly as can be. And any other time, he was just trying to bite and kick and just, And I can't remember the name of that horse, just for nothing. My memory's terrible. That's one thing about the concussions. I get some memory loss here and there. I think of it 3 hours later.
Yeah, but that's fine. I hear that a lot, though, about horses that, they can be mean. They'll snap at you. They'll bite, right? But certain horses, not every horse, certainly. Certain horses.
Right.
But when they're around kids, they turn into these docile animals that are so gentle. There's really something to that, isn't there?
Well, yeah, and I think that's why they're so therapeutic, for people, because they could sense something's not right. I think that's why horses are just great around kids, and for the most part, you're always going to have one. But, the same as people using them at the farms and bringing mentally challenged, kids or people, they just have a sense of, you know, something's not right. So, you know, it's kind of like they're trying to protect you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just think, this, you know, they're so therapeutic around. Like I said, that stud horse that I remember with my grandfather having, I mean, it was a battle for the groom every day just to, you know, get him tacked up. But, you know, my grandpa would pull him out of the stall and set me on him, and we'd walk around the shed row like it was nothing. I think they have a sense of they know the purity in a kid. You know, they know that kid's not going to hurt them. And, you know, I think it's a relaxing, comfortable thing for them. That's just my opinion. But
yeah, yeah. Tell me about the three horses you have in your barn now, Frank.
I've got one, he's just a cheap horse. You know, he's okay. Nothing special to scream at. And I've got a pretty nice Indiana bred right now for some nice owners that you know, give me a shot with her. And I've run her twice now. I've run her once at Churchill back in the spring. And then, you know, they're letting me take my time with her and do right by the horse. And she just runs second in a straight maiden Tuesday a week ago up in Indiana. So I think she's going to be one of the nicer horses I've had. And then I got a little filly that I claimed for a good friend of mine and his wife, Brent and Amy, back in May. We've run her, I think, three or four times now, and, you know, got a second out of her. But I think we've helped this horse a little bit. You know, we claimed her cheap, but put some weight on her and got her feeling good. I can't really say I got anything standing out special at the moment, but, I've got a few nice horses right now for competitive for where they're going to run.
How do you build up the stable? And first of all, how many horses would you like to have in an ideal world?
Honestly, in an ideal world, I wouldn't really want any more than 10 or so.
Yeah.
I don't want to have more than I could get in the stall with every day. You know, I love spending time with each horse and learning each horse because every one of them is different. You know, you learn the little quirks and you learn about the horse, and I think that's what helps you train them as well. You know, I listen to the horses. You know, I don't make them do what I say. I listen to them and try to keep them happy and fit. And like I said, you learn about them. The more you can spend time with each horse, the more you learn. And I don't want to have more than I can spend time with. Because at that point, you're not really paying me to train, you know.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you know, you're paying for my name and have it in my barn, you know, because I'm not really spending much time with it. You know, if you got a ton of horses, it's hard to. I think Mike Maker's the best at it. You know, Mike can leave here and go to Saratoga and have 40 horses up there, and you just put one out of stall and he'll tell you the name of the horse. You know, Mike's one of the best at it, and Mike's been good to me over the years too. You know, he's a real nice guy. But you know, I really wouldn't. You know, like I said, I'm not trying to get rich. I just want to be able to make a living doing something that I love doing, and I'm passionate about. And you know, so any more than 10, I think it'd be hard to spend much time with them.
So what's the optimal way to build the stable and go from 3 to 10? Is it claiming horses? Is it just having people send you horses that are young horses? What's the optimal way to do that, Frank?
Honestly, I haven't figured that part out yet. That's why I only got 3 horses. you know, I don't want to say I want to get away from the claiming horses, but I'd like to get better stock. And you know, and that's where I got to talking about my record saying, you know, I've had I'll forget 30% in the money, I think, over the years. But I have to get out of quit taking just anything and, you know, just to have the horse. And because before I just didn't stand on the horse. You know, if it couldn't run. Or, you know, if it wasn't very good, it didn't matter. I would still take it. So I think I got to build my record up some. And by doing that, I got to get better horses. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to figure out now. And, you know, I think you got to be in the right place at the right time and meet the right people. You know, you got to have somebody that's going to be willing to invest in you and, you know, send you some horses.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've been at Trackside for 10 years now. And honestly, I think I'm just now, you know, earning some of the respect of some of the people that's been there for years because it's, in a way, kind of like the wrestling business. You know, it's just pay your dues, you know, spend your time and show you know what you're talking about because, you know, you're somebody sends you one of your horses, it's basically them giving you X amount of dollars and saying, here, you know, see what you can do with it. So, you know, I take that as a huge responsibility and I take it very serious.
Yeah, well, you're bigger than a lot of those guys, so you can just put them in their place and, you know, they'll have to respect you.
Yeah, well, anymore, I prefer not to fight. I'd rather just go somewhere and drink a beer. I'll just buy you a beer. Let's just call it even. But, you know, I try to do everybody right. Sometimes I'm honest to a fault. But, you know, I'm just hoping over the years of, you know, trying to treat people right and do people right and whatnot, eventually that'll pay off.
Frank, only about a minute and a half left in the program, and this has really been a fun visit here on Trainer Talk tonight. But I do like to end by asking trainers to share something with our listeners, maybe a hobby or another sport that you follow outside of wrestling, something else that you enjoy outside of horses, outside of wrestling. What would it be?
Believe it or not, I'm a huge fan of old TV shows.
Okay.
Old TV shows, Andy Griffith, Rifleman, Gunsmoke, old westerns, John Wayne, the list goes on and on. You know, I don't watch much TV, but when I do, it's, you know, I'm looking for Andy Griffith for MASH. I'm just a big fan of old television shows and old movies.
Yeah, I'll tell you, MASH, still right there for me. I'll spend time now, even now, going back and, you know, if I see it on, I'll get glued to it, and I'll watch three or four in a row. It's one of those shows that was my favorite growing up, and I'm still captivated by it.
I've got the whole series of MASH on DVD, Green Acres, Andy Griffin, Perry Mason. all the old shows like that. They're wholesome to me. You know, it's just wholesome shows it's a story, and that's the end of it. You know, it's not political or anything like that. It's just good. I love Andy Griffiths. You know, it's just a good, wholesome TV show. And it teaches kids values, you know, back them days anyway. You know, getting kids to watch it these days isn't working too well. But
yeah, right.
I'm a big fan of old shows.
What's your favorite John Wayne movie?
The Shootist.
All right.
The Shootist. The last film he ever made. The Shootist, that, you know, because they had Ron Howard, Harry Morgan, who I'm a fan of, Colonel Potter from MASH, and The Rifleman was it's another show that I really enjoy.
Well, he is Trainer Frank Miller. He has been my special guest on Trainer Talk here tonight. And Frank, I've really enjoyed hearing your story all the way back to getting started in wrestling and now moving on to this career with the horses. And want to wish you all the best moving forward, my friend. I hope things go extremely well. And I'll look forward to saying hello at some point when I make it over there to Churchill Downs.
Please do. I enjoy meeting you in person, and I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much. Frank Miller here on HRRN. And what a fun visit. What a cool guy. If you see him, well, why not? Go up to him and say, "What's up, Trailer Park Trash?" You're not going to be insulting him. That was his wrestling name for about 20 years with Ohio Valley Wrestling. And fun story. He's done a lot in his life, and as you can hear, now it's all about the horses for Frank Miller, and we do wish him all the best moving forward. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, simply head back to our website. It's all there for you, the podcast, horseracingradio.net. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody.